Hello and welcome to the first episode of That's What She Read, where we explore a feminist book with me, Hannah Thacker.
And me, Nina Rattridge.
So you came up with this name.
I know, I'm really proud of it. It's not that impressive, but
I love it. It's great.
Yeah. Well, yeah, so we basically decided that it'd be nice to do something different every once in a while.
Yes.
And also, we have always said that when we move in together, we're going to have an absolutely epic feminist bookshelf.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be
library.
A shame.
I mean, more than a bookshelf.
Fucking hell. All right, Klaus Baudelaire.
Wow. Nice. From a series of unfortunate events, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm totally a Klaus.
I think I'm a Klaus. Anyway,
yeah, I think you're a Sunny.
I do eat a lot. I don't chew.
You're bitey.
Yeah. That's me. They call me Bitey Nina.
So, back onto the topic of this episode. What's our first book?
We are talking about today The Wonderful Feminists Don't Wear Pink and Other Lies by Scarlett Curtis, which has been all over the press. And you've probably heard of it. But we have a special interest in it.
Yeah.
And we thought it made sense to start with this.
Mm-hmm. Like most people might have seen it in the press. Mm-hmm. And we've also talked about it before on the podcast.
Yeah, we have.
And we went to a book launch and panel and Guilty Feminist recording. All rolled into one. At the Lowry in Manchester, where we got a copy of the book.
Got them signed.
Got them signed by the lovely panel.
Met some of the contributors.
Mm-hmm. Which included Sharmadeen Reed, Grace Campbell, Amy Trigg, Scarlett Curtis, and Deborah Frances White.
Indeed, it did. We left with 5 new people to fangirl.
Mm-hmm.
Not that we weren't already fangirling Deborah Frances White a little bit. But...
Oh, definitely. Well, I think we definitely both came away with our new favourite role model, which is Sharmadeen Reed.
I know. She was...
Brilliant. So
just
good.
Amazing. Yeah. She's just so matter-of-fact, and everything she said was so concise, and she just has this amazing way of speaking that doesn't... It feels like she's written a speech for everything she's saying,
Absolutely.
But it's off the cuff. It's amazing.
Yeah. She's just, like, such a... Wherever in your life that you need advice, she's got it.
Mm.
So if it's, you know...
She was applying it to everything. Mm-hmm. Like, there was questions from the audience, wasn't there? And she just had amazing advice for them. Like, so methodical.
Yeah, and, like, stuff you can actually apply.
Mm. Like, she gives you literal... Mm-hmm. I think she kind of apologised for that early on, in a way. She was like, I'm sorry, all my stuff's going to be really, like, matter of fact. And
don't apologise.
But that was perfect. She was giving you, like, literal things you can do.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing.
My takeaway and thing that I implemented immediately was she recommended a few apps in order to make your life some ways smoother, in some ways more feminist.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is a Gmail plugin called Just Not Sorry. And it corrects our sort of any submissive or apologetic language.
Hedging language.
Yeah. Mm. So, for example, something like, would you mind if you would... have a look at this for me, or sorry to ask, but could you please, stuff like that, which is very roundabout, and it's just unnecessary. Be direct.
Yeah.
And this helps you, because a lot of it is ingrained in our subconscious. Mm. We've always done it because we've seen
it feels impolite.
People before us. Yeah, and it's very British.
It's so British. I was just going to say that. France don't do it. If you say please too many times, they're like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, would you mind if is not a thing in French. You would not say that. It's just like, can I? Everything is like, can I do this? Can I do that?
Oh, gosh.
I've actually been thinking about that a lot when I've been applying for jobs recently. Because in emails, I'm so unnecessarily polite. And I always close with sort of like a really lengthy, like, thank you for taking the time to do this and this and this. But it's so excessive. And it's like, why? I don't need to thank them. Like, I'm offering myself to work for them. It's not like... Like, they put the advert out.
Yeah.
I am responding to it.
Mm-hmm.
They want people to apply. I'm doing what they wanted. I don't need to apologise.
Yeah.
Mm.
I think it's good. It's good to be conscious. And
yeah.
Yes, that was great. It was a great panel. We loved it.
Mm-hmm.
So, cracking on with the book.
Indeedy.
The royalties of the book go to a charity called Girl Up.
Yeah.
I believe you're going to tell us what Girl Up is.
A UN foundation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if charity would be the right word. It's like a subsection of the UN, basically.
Okay.
And so from their website, I'll read what it says they are, because their words are probably the best to describe it.
Yeah.
It says, no matter their background, girls have the power to transform themselves, their communities, and the world around them. Girl Up is a global movement of empowered young women leaders who defend gender equality. Through leadership development training, Girl Up gives girls the resources and platform to start a movement for social change wherever they are. For those who stand with us in this movement, there is no rest until we achieve equal rights for every girl, because when girls rise, we all rise. Girl Up was founded by the UN Foundation in 2010 and continues to work across a global community of partners to achieve gender equality worldwide.
Yes.
Sounds pretty good, doesn't it?
Yeah, so just helping girls around the world to become leaders and advocates and activists in feminism and equal rights.
Yeah, and instilling the belief that they can do that, which is brilliant.
It's great.
And some of the Girl Up leaders in different countries contributed to the book as well.
They did, quite nice. And I love, really opened your eyes to many different cultures and how women's rights are or are not present.
Yeah. I like that you can apply the methods and the resources that Girl Up gives you to whatever the community needs, or however you think, because obviously the best way to improve a community is from within. So it gives the girls within a community the power to do it themselves without any outside, like...
without any white saviours.
Yeah. Exactly. Without any gap year students.
So the book is split into 8 sections, and within those sections there are essays, creative pieces, poetry from many different contributors, some names you will know, some you may not.
Women from all walks of life.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of different types of people.
For sure.
Which is cool.
Mm-hmm. And the 8 sections are epiphany, anger, joy, poetry, action, education, further reading, and some last words.
Mm-hmm.
So, shall we... we've picked 4 essays each that particularly stood out to us, even though we loved them all and it was so impossible to pick just 4.
Yeah, I could have honestly just flicked through and poked a page and just been happy to talk about that.
Uh-huh.
But we talked about some of our favourites.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we researched some of our... researched? We read. What am I trying to say? We read our favourites and we're going to talk about them.
Yes, that's what we're doing.
That is the point, yeah. First thoughts then? Yes, no? The whole book?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. I think it's a really good concept, and it was actually executed really well, which doesn't always go hand in hand, a great idea and good execution, so.
Yeah. What I loved about it is that you could pick it up and read one essay.
Yeah.
And put it down again.
It's so easy to read.
It wasn't like you had to sit down and spend loads of time and be like, oh my God, what is all this feminist theory? I don't understand this. I'm going to have to go back to the 70s and research some. It was very contemporary, which I like. And some of the essays were longer and took a bit more time. Some of them very quick.
Yeah.
And it's just,
that's such a nice balance, isn't it? Like, it was just really, really well done. I think you can tell... I remember at the panel, Scarlett mentioning how pretty much everyone was so short with the deadline, and she was panicking, because that's why there was a few more contributions from her in it than she kind of planned, I think.
Okay.
Because she ended up writing a bunch more, because she was worried that people weren't going to get theirs in on time, because everyone was so last minute. And I do think you can tell a few people rushed, or didn't have time, or... maybe didn't quite understand the brief, but that was like 3 in the whole book, and there's so many. It doesn't really bear on it, your enjoyment of it.
Mm-hmm.
And even those ones were still enjoyable. It was just a bit more like they were put to shame by some of the other well thought out.
And when you've got that many essays, there's going to be different levels in there. So.
And everyone interpreted it differently, which I really enjoyed. That was very true. So good, which we'll probably touch on, because the things we've chosen to talk about are quite different.
Mm-hmm. And for anyone that doesn't know, the subheading of the book is what the F word
amazing women on what the F word means to them.
That's the one. So yeah, essentially each essay is about what does the F word, aka feminism, mean to you.
Mm-hmm. And also the book we haven't mentioned is pink.
It is pink. Yes.
So we don't have to worry about pink anymore, everyone. Scarlett Curtis has fixed it. We're allowed to wear pink again. It's not unfeminist.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, should we go?
We should go.
Yeah?
Bye.
Not leave. Okay.
Oh, that was an easy joke.
I set it up nicely, didn't I? Who go first?
You go first.
Okay. I'm going to take you to a section called Imposter Syndrome by Alaa Mirabit, who is a doctor and an international advocate for inclusive peace processes.
Wow. So impressive just, human.
Not much, just a few things. So just a bit of backstory on her. She is from Canada, and I believe still lives in Canada, but her family are from Libya. She's visibly Muslim and a woman. So I'm going to read you a little extract, which I'm going to try and not let go on too long.
Okay.
Because I want to read you the whole thing, but I won't. So basically, she trained to be a doctor, and it was always her dream since being a child to be, in her words, the best surgeon in town. She wanted to go on to specialise in surgery after she'd got her first doctor qualification, but then the Libyan revolution happened, and instead of doing that, she just decided to found a women's rights organisation called The Voice of Libyan Women. She talks about her experience here just after she had started the VLW, The Voice of Libyan Women,
mm-hmm.
So I'll read from here. She says, "My confidence wasn't shaken until nearly a year after I'd launched VLW. I had been having coffee with someone I considered a mentor, an older white male who told me in good faith, 'Be very non-threatening, Alaa. Don't freely give your opinions.' After I had told him about a heated debate I'd had with a colleague. When I asked what he meant, he elaborated, 'There are going to be four challenges that you're going to come across in your career. Your background, Libyan, your faith, visibly Muslim, your gender, a woman, and then,' he said with a laugh, 'the last one, you're lucky, you'll grow out of it, and that's your age.'" She goes on to say, "Months later, I walked into one of my first high-level meetings. Now, to understand how truly excited I was, I would like you all to imagine you're 21. I had spent the days before preparing, and when I walked into the room, I saw my name engraved on a wooden nameplate. I took a seat and started pulling out my papers. I had never felt more self-assured, and at that moment a young woman, an intern I would say about my age, maybe a year older, approached me and said, 'Sorry, but that is Dr. Murabit's seat, and I hear he's very difficult.' She went on to tell me that I should go and sit at the back along with the other support staff. I picked up my notepad and computer and went and sat at the back. Now, I don't know how many of you relate to this, when you kind of freeze and have an almost out-of-body experience. I didn't come back up to my seat until my colleagues, noticing I wasn't there, told me to move up to the table." So she goes on to talk about imposter syndrome more broadly.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly she is a woman that has done so much, so young, that it's just phenomenal that imposter syndrome is still going to get you.
Mm-hmm.
She goes on to say that she don't think she'll ever grow out of it. And I think that's the same for a lot of women. But it's just so heartbreaking when she's undeniably done so much and so deserves a place at that table that she's still going to feel that way.
I remember that bit very clearly of the book.
Mm.
And what disheartened me was the fact that she did go into that boardroom. She achieved all that. She was a doctor by the age of 21.
Mm.
And she went in self-assured until someone pointed out the fact that you're not what I expected.
Yeah.
And then she was like, oh my God, I'm not meant to be here.
Yeah.
Because of just one person's influence. So I think it's really important not to make assumptions, not to make judgments.
Yeah. She goes on to say that she doesn't blame the intern. Obviously, it's a comment on the bigger system that she wasn't expecting to see. The rest of the table was white men.
Mm.
So what you wouldn't expect. The intern had never seen anyone other than that sat at that table. So
wow.
It's just bonkers. But hopefully that's the kind of thing that we're seeing different faces at these tables now.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I'll just let anyone, if I was in that situation, just be an intern that lets anyone sit at the table. Any can sit wherever they want. Like, Nina, this is mayhem. Why are the people from the canteen here?
That sounds fun.
Mm. My leadership style. So who have you got for us next, Hannah?
So the next essay that I want to talk about is called African Feminist by Tapiwa H. Maoni. And I'll just go into the background, I guess.
Go for it.
So she is from Malawi. And in Malawian culture, the women are quite subservient to men, sticking to these predestined gender roles by, you know, society.
You know, have you heard of that? Society.
For example, women will wake up early in the morning to clean the house, make food. At any, you know, big family gatherings, the women will work tirelessly to, you know, make sure everyone's fed and everything is, like, provided, and men will just chill out.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, you lost me early in the morning, but it got worse.
It did get worse. Can't even have a good time at party.
No.
So Tapiwa talks about the time, age 13, that a Malangizo was set up for her, and this is kind of like a community finishing school style system where women are taught how to be women.
Yes.
And like how to act around men and, you know, be very formal.
Okay.
And there is no equivalent for men in Malawi.
Right.
So that's the thing.
I think they need it more. Just how to act around all people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, does anyone need a finishing school? No. When she went to high school, this gender gap became even more apparent because while half of her class, so the girls in her class, were failing core subjects like maths, the boys were doing better, and the teachers, rather than being like, what's going on here, were like, well, obviously, the guys are doing better because they're just better at maths and engineering and accounting. And so instead, counselling the girls to take easier subjects.
Yeah. I remember this one. This was almost what I wanted to talk about.
It was a good one. Mm. Then in 2017, Tapiwa had the opportunity to attend a Women in Science, Technology, Engineering, Art and Maths programme.
Just a few things.
Yeah. And this was taking 100 girls from across the globe to take part in this. So she's one of 100.
That's elite as fuck.
Yeah. And I'm going to read a section of the book that talks about how they sort of shaped her experience and new perspective.
Okay. A positive one.
Mm-hmm. It was the first time in my life that I started to question a lot of the things I had been taught and made to believe. It was the first time I started asking why. Why was I below any male? Why was I regarded as not smart enough, strong enough, or worthy of the same rights the males in my society so liberally enjoyed? Why was I not allowed to have opinions? Why was I not treated equally? Why? Feminism to me means that I am deserving. I am deserving of a better future, an education in a conducive environment, a career of my choice in which I am treated fairly, respect for the things that I believe in, recognition for the things that I do well, a voice that is not only heard but listened to, access to equal opportunities, and most importantly, the permission to exercise my rights because of my humanity and regardless of my gender.
Beautiful. Bravo. Yes. I like the bit about voices being listened to and not just heard, because I do think that's a kind of appeasement thing with any minority group or anyone that's trying to get their voice heard. There can be a tendency from governments and big authorities to just sort of let people say things at them and say what they want without
any follow-up.
Yeah, without any follow-up, and just saying, well, we've listened, we've heard it, so that's what you wanted, right? Like, we're not gonna do anything now.
What I really like about Tapiwa is that from this new fire feminism, she went back to Malawi and is now a Girl Up club leader.
Yeah,
so she's helping other women and girls in her community to discover their voice and know their rights.
Yes. Actually, going back to that,
the
last one, the Alaa Murabit I was talking about.
Yeah.
She had a sec about the impact including women in things has on society. So she talks about how climate change. The most cost-effective way to combat that is the education of girls and reproductive rights, because obviously rising populations have such an impact on climate change. She talks about peace processes. 90% fail within 5 years, but with the inclusion of women, they are 35 times more likely to last 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
Economic growth. If 10% of girls in a country are educated, they increase the GDP by 2 to 3%. And women then reinvest 90% of their income into their community, as opposed to men who reinvest 35 to 40%, spurring local economic growth and social transit and transformation. So,
yes, I remember that bit as well.
Yeah, that's crazy, mm-hmm. about reinvesting back into your own community.
Yeah.
Like, fucking women are brilliant. That's how we end up with such wealth gaps, because men just reinvest back into themselves, whereas women don't.
Yeah, according to those stats, that's very true.
Mm. Do you want me to go?
Yeah, you go. You're the next. Okay.
So one of my favourite things about the book is that it's not preachy in any way. It's mm-hmm. just people's stories, and you can't argue with people's stories.
Very true.
And also, it's funny. There's comedians in here, and there's a lot of really funny content. One of my favourites was by Amani Al-Khatbeh, called 17 Truths About Muslim Women. She's a writer and media entrepreneur. You can tell she's a writer because this is real funny, kind of, at times. I don't want to... It's not always funny, but okay. So I've decided to pick for you 5 of my favourites. And number 4, liberation does not mean bombs, ever. Number 9, how about style tips from Christian women for a change?
No one wants that. I'm joking. Religious freedom is good.
Not for Christians, though.
You're joking. We need to not.
Yeah, okay. Number 10, cheat code. If we're ranking different forms of gender violence, it's racism. Number 11, this is the big one.
Okay.
She has a voice. If you can't hear it, maybe it's because you're too busy talking.
Yeah, so shut up.
And number 14, my personal favourite out of the whole book. My religion mandates sexual satisfaction from my partner. What does yours do? And I looked into that because I didn't realise that was a thing. But it is a thing that, like, about women being sexually satisfied.
Good. Put it in the books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We all need to know about that. I should be careful. We're going to have, like, millions of people converting to Islam on account of
Well, can you adopt some principles if they work for you? Why not?
Millions. Like, we have millions of listeners.
No, millions of people. So influential. All right, so I've got another quickie.
Wait. That's what she said. I finally did it.
Oh, you did. You did.
I do it so much in real life, and I've never done it in the podcast. I'm so happy.
So, as I'm a musicy person, you probably expect this. There is a playlist for feminists in any situation by Akilah Hughes, who's a comedian. It includes such hits as Flawless by Beyoncé,
mm-hmm.
I'm Coming Out by Diana Ross.
Oh, that was nice. Thank you.
You're welcome. So you can't say that without singing it.
No, it's true. It's true.
And No Scrubs by TLC, which was my jam when I was 11.
And now?
And now. I'll just... So with each of the song recommendations, she's written a little paragraph. So I'm going to read the No Scrubs one.
Okay.
Women hold up the whole world. I truly believe that. They are the backbone of family structures and are expected to put everyone else's existence before their own. Nah. Not anymore. No Scrubs is a song that will hold up forever. Not only because of the ironic melody that's been used in Ed Sheeran's Shape of You,
Has it?
Yeah, apparently.
Okay, hang on.
And is sung in bars and cars alike. It will hold up forever because it's unabashedly about reclaiming your time from scrubs who expect more than they deserve.
Hannah, what's a scrub? A waste man.
A waste man? Yeah.
Okay, I'm glad we got that clear.
You knew, you didn't need to ask me.
I always thought, I really know this is stupid, but I did always think it was Dr. Scrubs.
I think everyone has thought that at some point.
Like, I don't think I never...
I don't want anyone that's working in the medical profession, thanks. Put that in my Tinder bio.
No scrubs. Not like the song. I mean, literally, no scrubs. They don't flatter.
You don't have time for me. You're working.
Or I always thought of the TV show Scrubs. Yes. I just never, I think the thing is I never really stopped to think about what it meant. So I just let myself believe it was about doctors. But
hey.
You've educated me. You've enlightened me.
Waste man. No waste man.
Could have been more clear. God.
All right. Who have you got next?
Okay. I've got a big dog.
All right.
I've got a famous for you.
A famous.
So this one's interesting for me because thanks to Pirates of the Caribbean being a bit shit, I always hated Keira Knightley. Like, I really, really disliked her for no real reason. But I read her contribution to this and it made me cry a little bit. I mean, I have just started back on the pill, so that could be it. But it did make me cry a bit. It's called The Weaker Sex, and she's writing to her daughter about essentially her own birth, the birth of her daughter, and also about the world that she's going to be living in.
It's a very, very powerful piece.
It's really powerful. Mm-hmm. It's brilliant. Like, I have to like her now. I have to change my opinion of someone. That's the worst. So I've got an extract that I'm going to read, but I want to point out that the first few pages I was so impressed with because they're so gory. They talk about childbirth in an unashamedly gory and honest way. She talks about blood soaking through the sanitary pad wedged between her legs. When family came to visit her, the baby started crying and she immediately ran to her, exposing herself to the men in the room, blood running down her thighs, arse, cellulite, all out. You are mine, and I'll stop you crying. My breast is out in front of them all, and I don't care. Their embarrassed faces at my animalistic semi-nudity. Is this soft motherhood? Like, I'm going to talk about another bit. I could talk about this bit forever, but I just love that. Just, why are women the weaker sex? Okay, and skipping to the end of it, this last bit is just so powerful. I'm going to read this for you. I work with men. I watch them and they watch me. They worry that I don't like them. It drives them mad. They belittle me. They try not to listen to me and they don't talk to me. They don't want to hear my voice, my experience, my opinion. Be pretty. Stand there. They tell me what it is to be a woman. Be nice. Be supportive. Be pretty, but not too pretty. Be thin, but not too thin. Be sexy, but not too sexy. Be successful, but not too successful. Wear these clothes. Look this way. Buy this stuff. I work with men and they worry that I don't like them. It makes them mad. It makes them sad. It makes them shout and scream. I like them, but I don't want to flirt and mother them. Flirt and mother, flirt and mother. I don't want to flirt with you because I don't want to fuck you. And I don't want to mother you because I'm not your mother. I am her mother. I would die for her, kill for her. That's not the kind of mother they mean. I just want to work, mate. Is that okay? Talk and be heard, be talked to and listen. Male ego, stop getting in the way. I am not the weaker sex. You are not the weaker sex. We are not the weaker sex.
Mm-hmm.
It's so good.
It is just perfect.
I love it. Yeah. It's brilliant. I don't know why I wouldn't have expected that from her. That's my own prejudgments, but I just love it. I think it's brilliant. Mm-hmm. The whole bit about flirt and mother, that applies to so many fields. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to just appease men all the time by either pretending you want to shag them or taking on some weird-ass nurturing role that is not yours to do.
I love the bit where it's like, be successful, not too successful. Be pretty, but not too pretty. Always, always happens. Mm. Like, a constant like mediating of like not being an intimidating woman.
Yeah.
And that's not a problem with the woman, problem with whoever is being intimidated. Yeah. It's their own anyway, I could get into it so much more. But yeah, Keira Knightley said it much better than anyone.
I loved it. I love Keira Knightley now, so I guess I'm gonna have to watch more of her things that aren't Pirates of the Caribbean. Go back to you.
Yeah. So we've got another big dog.
A big dog?
A big dog.
Is it Clifford? Is he red? My references are just so, so all over the place.
Like, they really are.
There is no culture to me.
I never know how to take them, to be honest.
Nobody does.
No, the big dog is not Clifford. It is Jodie Whittaker.
Yes.
Wow. Okay, so Jodie Whittaker's contribution is an interview with my mum.
Your mum?
Well, that's the title, not my mum. That would be... I would actually love that.
Yeah.
But, anywho, it's basically coming back to the conversation of talking about feminism with your mum. And she's like, you know, what's your understanding of feminism from your generation compared to how I've come up with it? Like, she grew up going to school in the 90s. Mm-hmm. So it was all about, you know, Spice Girls and girl power. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the standing for feminism. Whereas her mum didn't really have the definition that much in her life of feminism. And I think, I don't know about you, but I've had this conversation with my mum asking her, well, she's actually asked me, am I a feminist?
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I've never had that conversation with my mum, I don't think.
Yeah, your mum's just self-assured in her feminism. Mm. For me, that was, I kind of saw parallels with the conversation I might have had with my mum.
That's cool. It's probably the same for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what's nice about it.
And also, this is absolutely hilarious. It's so funny.
She is funny, isn't
so
she?
So funny. Halfway through the interview, so it's actually done interview style, they get a takeaway, takeaway comes, and I'm going to read after they've had their takeaway.
Always the best place to start.
So, Jodie Whittaker said, did you bring me and Christian up intentionally gender neutral? The wine has confirmed that I am absolutely nailing this interview. Mum/Yvonne. I don't think that term had been coined, but I wanted you both to have the same chances as each other, and I wanted you to be able to be who you wanted to be. When I was growing up, I wanted to be a teacher, but I was told by my parents that I wouldn't make it, so don't bother trying. Brackets, this pisses me off so much. She would have been an amazing teacher. Mum Yvonne. I never wanted that for you and your brother, regardless of your sex. I thought if I could make you confident and teach you that anything is possible, then I'd have done my job. Me. Okay, that's brilliant. And thank you so very much. I think that maybe why I was so frustrated as a kid, because you guys never restricted us to gender roles. You can't go anywhere without them being reinforced. I mean, watching some kids' cartoons now makes me want to scream. Why has that character been drawn with mascara on? It's a fucking animal. Why are those characters running and jumping and that girl character is watching and giggling at the side? Why, when I was at school, were no celebrated scientists, musicians or playwrights women? Why are we only taught about the achievements of men? Why, when women unite and come together with their voices raised, does the term witch hunt get bandied around? Why are some of my natural characteristics referred to as tomboy? I take a breath and realise I've only asked her 2 questions and she already looks pretty tired, but I'm on a roll now. There's no way she's going to bed until we've smashed the fuck out of the glass ceiling.
Oh. That's so good.
I could read the whole thing. Yeah. I'm going to stop there, go buy the book and read it.
Mm.
So good. I love
that. We've done that with all of them. We could read all of them. I could just sit here and read the book to you. But...
oh, audiobook.
That's so illegal.
Yeah, definitely. Anywho.
Okay, this is my last one.
Anywho, Doctor Who.
Oh my God.
It's too good, couldn't miss it. Yeah, go on.
Right. My last one is a poem by Swati Sharma. I'm not going to read you the whole thing. But... it's called I Don't Feel Like a Woman. I'll read you, I think, from the first section. I don't feel like a woman when I walk into Sephora without knowing what, in fact, happens at Sephora. I don't feel like a woman, but I feel like a ghost, lurking upon some strange ancestral treasure I never really knew how to open or own. A different section. I don't feel like a woman in a classroom or a business meeting, which is to say I'm happy enough to be there. If joke could rhyme with woman, I'd put it in this poem, because I don't know what else I am when some unknown woman's assault becomes a punchline in the making. Mm. Sometimes I might be a punchline too. I don't feel like a woman because no man loves me, which is to say I have spent afternoons imagining hypothetical men singing my praises, each one of them telling me they love me for more than just my body, but also my body, which is to say I don't. I don't feel like a woman. I feel like a token, an incident, some decadent creature sitting proudly upon its own ruins, which is to say, by looking at me, you won't be able to tell that I don't feel like a woman. I'm skipping to the end.
Okay.
No, I am a woman, and I get to define what that means, which is to say, I will.
Yes. I love that. I love that poem.
The whole thing is really, really good. Obviously, it doesn't have the same effect when you jump around it a bit, but we don't really have time for me to read the whole thing, so...
And, you know, we don't want to ruin the surprise.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Just leaving blanks in.
Mm-hmm. I love that, like, the total relatability of everything in that poem. Like, going into Sephora and be like, I do not belong here. Everyone is so shiny.
Yeah. Why is it so bright? I feel dirty now.
All right. So we'll go to my last choice. This is going to be a long one.
Okie dokie.
Because I feel like I won't be able to do it justice.
That's fair.
Otherwise. So this essay is called Sharia State of Mind by Emtathal Mahmood. I'm going to just go straight into reading.
Okay.
The essay kind of starts on a bit of like a flashback to when Emtathal was visiting her family in Darfur at the time when conflict sprung up in Sudan.
Okay.
And that later led to a genocide in 2003, and it inspired one of her poems called People Like Us, and also led to her activism. So we go to present tense, I guess. And I'll read now. I was getting ready to walk 1,000 kilometres across Sudan in 30 days, and the people were already gathering in the square. My uncle, the same one who'd come home with clothes covered in blood from those he'd carried, either to safety or to rest, all those years ago, came intermittently into the room where my cousin and I were packing to check how much progress we'd made. You know you're going to be late. Why are you always late? He's a lawyer, so he tends to get a bit nervous when things seem to be going wrong. But this time, it was nervous excitement because he was beaming the whole time. My uncle had accompanied me across Darfur as I conducted the first fully inclusive civilian peace talks in Sudan, hosting poetry town halls to get the ball rolling and collecting people's dreams for peace. He asked me then the same question I knew he was about to ask me now as I threw my next pair of trousers into my backpack. You're going to wear trousers? I'm going to stop there.
Cliffhanger.
I know, right?
That was good. Good editing.
So obviously her uncle is very proud of her and supportive, but also concerned for her safety. Because as a Muslim country where women are expected to wear long skirts and dresses, it's seen as something quite radical. She goes on to say how she's baffled that people still care so much about what she wears.
Yeah.
About her clothing rather than her ideas and her messages and her activism work. And she says, seriously, we're about to change history and you're worried about clothes.
Yeah. People say women worry about clothes, but people like to tell women what to wear more than...
Well, yeah, very true. Yeah. Mm. And like she herself does talk about, she is a bit nervous because she knows that playing it safe is how it's typically been done, even for other activist women.
Yeah.
I'm going to read yet another quote because it's just everything about this is beautiful. And it kind of talks about the importance of clothes, actually. So she does a whole, like, 360 on her argument saying clothes shouldn't be important, but then actually recognises they could have a power within themselves. In the end, I think change really does begin at home, at the dinner table, in a conversation, in split seconds, in quiet, determined moments. My clothing became just as big a demonstration as the walk or peace talks. My own existence became a protest too. This, to me, is the reason why feminism has to be championed on every front and in every space. Because if we are not advocating for equality in every room, we may well lose this battle in the long run. Pushing back in public isn't enough. If we aren't all pushing back on the individual level each and every single day in person, and sometimes it's as simple as packing trousers.
Oh yeah.
Mm.
Very nice.
Yeah, that's so, that was by Emtathal Mahmood, Sharia State of Mind.
Brilliant. The book is so good.
There are so many
good things. So many things. So, it's many so good difficult things. To choose. And yeah, I recommend it, actually. I really do recommend it for a read. Just to have on your bookshelf and dip in and out of. If you ever feel like you need a bit of a little bit of a boost.
Yeah.
Like, I used to listen to Guilt Femme Pod when I was cleaning and stuff. And it just felt really funny because it was like such a weird little, I'm a kept woman. And like, listening to it. But I loved it so much. And it, I always listen to it when I was, like, going through breakups and stuff, because it really empowers you.
Oh.
And I feel like that could, this book, be a good one for when you're feeling not your best.
Mm. So it's really great to hear from other women. That's, I guess that's why we're doing what we're doing, yep. because we want to
shine a light on, on the fact that women get through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So at the end of the book, there is a section called Your Thoughts, and it's a few lined pages where you can share your own thoughts on what the F word means to you. Did you write anything?
I did.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote mine like the other entries to the book. I wrote it as a, I don't know, like a story.
Okay.
So shall I read it like that?
I would love to hear it.
Okay. Oh, this is quite intimate suddenly, isn't it? Okay.
Mm.
Neither of us wrote actually in the book because we were too afraid of ruining it. But, this is brought to you from the notes section of my phone. Okay. Feminism found me when I was studying A-level politics. I must have encountered it before, but this is the first time I remember realising I was a feminist. Incidentally, it was around the same time I realised I was an anarcho, eco-Marxist socialist. We were studying ideologies and I decided that if it was remotely left-wing, I wanted to be it. I went home feeling pretty fucking empowered. I showed my mum a parody Blurred Lines music video, forgetting it contained the line, "And your precious dick could be my vibrator," and I'm still cringing. Then it all went tits up. I went to my delightful then-boyfriend's house and complained about how the original Blurred Lines video and how disgustingly sexist it was, not to mention the entire premise of the song. His response was, "Yeah, but how does it offend you personally?" followed by an immediate and lengthy breakdown of why feminism is all bull, and successfully convinced me that it was not something cool to be associated with. It was by no stretch of the imagination a good or even close to healthy relationship, but somehow this night has always stuck in my head as especially painful. I thought I'd found my thing in feminism, only to immediately feel like I couldn't have it. I don't think it was until my second year of uni when I really started to feel unashamed in calling myself a feminist. And it all came down to meeting wonderful, empowered women my own age. People that I thought were cool and still define themselves as feminists. Something I wasn't sure was possible. I'd always been raised with feminism by my parents, and I'm so glad they did such a brilliant job of teaching me how to be a feminist at my core, even when I didn't know it was called that. Because it meant that when I grew out of that shitty relationship and into my real self, I knew who I was at my core. I always found it hard realising I found things offensive that other people just didn't, and I think this ultimately is what brought me to writing about them. It meant I could articulate what I wanted to say with time and care and without the fear of immediate confrontation. Now feminism is beyond a passion for me. It's the central force driving my life forwards and giving me purpose and hope almost daily. I'm literally doing a master's in the 2019 version of women's studies, for fuck's sake. I see feminism like all the other ideologies. It's not just about women or one type of woman. It's about making the world better for everyone. I may not still be entirely anarcho-eco-Marxist socialist, but as political movements go, I think one that manages to combine activism and academia is as much a social movement as a political one, and has a genuine interest in the happiness of everyone on Earth at its heart. True intersectional feminism does a pretty good job.
Wow. That's so good.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing that.
Shall I send it to Scarlett and see what she has to say?
Yes, I think we should.
Hello, I'm Nina. You don't know me, but...
We're not famous or anything, but we're on the up.
We might be. Next book, please.
That was cool.
Thanks.
Right, mine is... Did you edit yours?
Not really.
No, good. I just wrote... It just came out.
Yeah.
I just wrote, and so... This is like this only the second time I'm even reading this myself.
Yeah, I had to proofread with my eyes and edit with my eyes then as I was reading it.
That may happen here. Yeah. So yeah, I also wrote my own thoughts down. Oh, here we go. I was never raised to be a feminist, at least not on purpose. When they say it takes a village, this couldn't have been more true of my childhood. And at the forefront of my upbringing were two unintentional matriarchs, my mother and my nan. Neither of them would call themselves feminists, but it wasn't some label that I found inspiring. It was their independence. They worked tirelessly and against multiple odds. These tales of industrious, self-sustaining women pepper my family tree, and I like to think I've inherited some of their strength and bravery. I recall the first time that my belief in equality rung out loud and clear. I was raised in a Pentecostal church, a sect of Protestant Christianity. In many ways, it was strict and isolating from the non-denominational world of school life. It's something that weighed on my mind ever greater as a 16-year-old when I tried to reconcile my two realities. One Sunday, in a group of my church-going peers, I proposed an idea. God was not a man, nor was God a woman. Instead, God was both, or neither, or all genders, all existences, present within everything. This independent thinking was not taken well. Instead, a youth group leader immediately rejected this idea, insisted that God was indeed a he, and rifled through the Bible to find a piece of scripture that proved his point. That day, I walked out of church and never returned.
Hannah, that's brilliant. I love it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's quite emotional.
It's quite emotional, isn't it?
It's emotional.
I feel like I was born a feminist.
Yeah, I definitely was.
Yeah, and I never was told, like, here, this is, like, feminism. This is what it looks like.
Yeah, I don't remember my parents ever saying, told me I was a feminist, because I don't think that's the right thing to do to a child, to say what they are for them.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until I studied it, and I literally came home so excited about it, and that then we started talking about it, and my parents let me take the lead, and they let me pretend to teach them about it, when they obviously already knew what I was saying.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just one of those unspoken things in our houses that has always been there, like, for my brother as well. I don't know if I've ever heard him say he's a feminist, but he is.
Yeah, I think everyone in my family have always promoted tolerance.
Yeah.
More than, like, one kind of ideology or another.
Mm.
And even though they're complex people and they have a lot of contradictions, as much as I do.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I feel like, how else, as a 16-year-old, did I have the strength to do that?
Mm.
I must have seen it somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
And I definitely say I've seen it in the women that brought me up.
Yeah. It's like I was saying about feeling like I had it in my core when I went, because like when I got out of that pretty shit relationship, I was a bit worried that I wouldn't know who I was because I'd been in it for so long. But that was just the first thing that came, that was the first thing that jumped out, and it was so liberating. And that was just what I grasped onto, and what, like, that had been in me, and I'd just like let it come out, and it felt so right. And I was like, yeah, this is what I was supposed to be doing all this time.
It's actually quite interesting that we had entirely different but in some ways similar experiences.
I was just thinking that, like, mine had nothing to, like, religion had played such a part in yours, and they're just, yeah, they're completely different.
Mm-hmm.
But I think everyone goes through a phase, especially in adolescence, where something is holding you back from feeling like you can use the word feminist to describe yourself. I don't think it's a, I think maybe in schools now it's acceptable, but I don't know, even if 5-10 years ago, like, it would have been a bit picked on, really.
I would still suggest that in schools it's not super promoted, like, especially state schools.
I don't know about promoted, but I don't know, like, with young people and their peers. I think the internet is doing such good things for making feminism cool, in inverted commas.
The internet is also telling women that you need to have the perfect body and some massive pouty face.
But I do think that I'm seeing more than ever young people reconciling that with, I'm not saying that that's a good thing, that image-obsessed thing that Instagram promotes and whatever.
Mm.
But I do see young people picking up the label feminist quicker than, I think it's happening younger.
I suppose it's very mainstream.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of, like, on trend. You can buy t-shirts with it on, therefore
exactly.
It's cool.
Exactly. Mm. I could go on a rant about capitalism.
I know. There are plenty of issues. But
so, yeah. Any final thoughts?
I don't know. I think we did all right.
We nailed it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think we can learn. We'll bring back a... We don't know how often we're going to be doing this, really. So...
Yeah, just look out.
Look out for us.
It'd be a little surprise.
Yeah.
You won't know when it's coming.
So we'll be talking about a different book next time. We'd love to hear your recommendations.
Absolutely.
I've got a little pile in the corner of my room here with books that we might be talking about, but it's always good to...
A little big pile. Let's be real.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also have several books, so let's do some swapping.
Yeah. Do some reading.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Thank you for listening once again.
Thank you very much.
Normal episodes would still be once a fortnight.
You can still find us on the socials.
You can still find us on the socials. Oh, we haven't promoted them.
We haven't plugged the socials in a while.
We haven't plugged the socials for a while. So, I should know this. Socials are my thing and I just always jam up. Okay. So, Facebook is just That's What She Said Podcast.
Yep.
Twitter, That's What She Pod.
Mm-hmm.
Instagram, that's what she said, _podcast.
Yes.
Yes, I got it right.
You'll be able to find us. And, you know, we have socials too. So yeah. If you want to follow us, definitely do, because we're great.
You can find links to us on the other socials.
Yep.
And also, all of your thoughts, feel free to DM us on any of the socials. But also, we have an email you can use, which is thatswhatshesaidlisteners@gmail.com.
It is indeed.
So, bye.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.